This episode is supported by The Finch, a seasonal American restaurant in Clinton Hill, and by C Management, a global leader in creative talent management.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Souther.
Hey, buddy.
I really like this applause whenever we...
When we sign on. It's nice. In-house audience.
I also like his really hard cuts.
Yeah.
It doesn't really fade anything.
Yeah.
The thing about the audience is they're actually just constantly applauding us, whether I turn their mic up or down.
I see.
Gotcha.
It's like being at a World Cup football game.
Yeah.
Football. Yeah. The crowd is constantly making noise. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, man, nothing. Not a whole lot, actually. I took a weekend off.
Good for you.
Yeah, I was actually in town for once for a whole weekend.
Wait, in town and off work?
And off work.
Wow.
And I just hung out, man. I just ate a bunch of food.
Go anywhere interesting?
No.
Just hung out and ate at your apartment? That's great. You know, I feel like people think...
I went to my regular hunts.
I feel like people think that we don't ever do that, you know? I feel like people think that our life is just a constant party.
In
a lot of ways it is. I agree. But that's kind of work. But then there are days where you're just like, oh, I'm just going to lay around the house and watch 10 episodes of MASH.
Well, I mean, 20.
I'm on season 6.
But yeah.
Got released on Netflix like 3 weeks ago. I'm on season 6.
That's amazing.
I watch like 3 episodes a night when I get home from work.
Heck yeah.
They're 22 minutes long.
Yeah. It's easy. Yeah. And it was just nice to actually be in town. Not be on the road, and be able to just hang out at like Frankie's in the backyard, and have salad and like some rosé.
Be a normal person.
Yeah, man. What about you?
You had your
party last night.
Exactly, the big party that I had at Porch Light for the pre-release of my book. I'm just here for the drinks. You can still get your pre-order in for Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of the places that sell books. And we donated part of the profits from the evening last night to the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, the DBSA. It's a group that is, you know, helping people deal with depression. And, you know, I'm trying to maybe do a little bit of work with them to focus specifically on folks who are in our business who deal with this stuff, because I've been pretty vocal about my dealings with depression and anxiety. And how it affects me at my work and in my life, and I feel like more and more people in our field are coming forward to say that they're having problems with this sort of thing. So it's a hot topic for me. So we raised a little bit of money for them. The press came out and got a bunch of books so that they can hopefully write about the book, also hopefully kindly. And then we did a couple hours of just the public coming in and being able to purchase a book in advance, because the book doesn't officially drop for another 2 weeks. A lot of people came and got an advanced copy of the book, and it was a great party and a lot of good time, and I'm exhausted today.
Well,
but
it's not for lack of hard work, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, man. Well, congrats on that. I can't wait to get my copy.
Oh, did you want one?
I'm just here for the book.
I'll make sure you get a copy. I'll mail one to the studio.
All right. I was gonna ask your publisher to send me one. You know, one of those press copies.
I think he would have laughed off. He'd be like, just get one from the guy.
I usually have a bunch of books stacked up somewhere.
I saw him out in the
booth. There we are. Yeah. Okay, got it. I mean, if you come to my bar to Grand Army, you'll see a lot of books. And I always, like, this is a thing, actually.
Do you get to read them all? Do you read them all?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, but, like, for every free book I get, I go out and buy it as a gift for either like one of my staff members or a friend or a family member.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, there's always a birthday. You go and like, you get alerts every day on Facebook, you know, so-and-so and 11 others have birthdays today. And you're like, you know what?
All right, I'm going to make a pledge right now. I pledge to donate the price of every single book I get from now on to a charitable concern.
There you go.
So every single book that I receive for free from now on, I will donate the price of that book to a charitable concern.
There you go.
How's that?
You got it.
I like your plan too, but my plan is my books have just become.
You always have to one up me.
Well, no, my the books that I get have just become the library for all my team.
Sure.
You know, they can.
Well, yeah, same.
They can
same.
Grab them anytime.
Yeah.
So I don't have to give one away. They can just come take one off the shelf.
Sometimes they don't come back.
Well, I definitely have some long
like
as they
signed
return.
Ones that like.
Oh, I hate that because I do like signed books. I'm kind of a nerd for it.
Yeah, me too.
I gotta try and get all my books signed by the authors.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Let's talk to our guest.
Yeah.
Let's get noisy up in here.
Yeah. Noisy Voisey.
Yeah, Charlotte Noisy. Charlotte Voisey is in the studio with us.
It's actually been a long time coming.
Yeah.
Been doing the show for 8 years. And
I
mentioned to you in passing a couple times, and you're like, yeah, whatever, Damon. But thanks for finally being on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm super excited to be here.
You got to be nice, Damon. I'm nice when I ask people to be on the show. Actually, I'm not nice, I don't think. I don't know how. I don't remember how I asked you, but I usually just tell people, hey, I want you on the show, and then I say some dates that are available, and then they just pick one.
I think that's actually how it went down.
Yeah. Charlotte Voisey, director of advocacy for William Grant & Sons, which is one of the largest. They're like number four, number three. Do you know? Is there a ranking? Does it matter?
It doesn't matter, I don't think, but we're not quite as big as people think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I kind of thought you were one of the bigs.
Yeah, I don't know if we make the top tens, but it's okay. We just look as long
plugging
as
along.
As long as
plucky
people,
little group, hope they make it.
There you go. Bet on the little guy.
That's right.
Not quite that either.
And you've been working for these guys for a dozen years, which is crazy.
That sounds way more than 12 when you put it that way. But right? Yes, it's been 12 years.
Well, next year it's a baker's dozen.
Break out the cupcakes. Yeah, 12 years now. 12 years in the U.S. 12 years with William Grant.
Yeah, so you were bartending and bar managing in the UK.
Yep.
And then these guys, talk to us about that. You were feeling a little, it's time to do something new. And then these guys made this offer. How did that work out?
Yeah, I had been bartending for a bunch of years and then managing a cocktail bar for about 4 years and loving it and doing really well, both personally and the bar. But I was starting to see other people's career progression in the industry, and you kind of quickly work out that it can sort of go one of two ways. It can stay in operations, which invariably can involve the late night thing, or the industry was starting to develop. There was a lot of education, a lot of competitions. There was a lot of need for brand work at that time, back in sort of the early 2000s. So there started to become these opportunities where, hang on a second, I could stay in the industry I love, work with the people who inspire me and I love being around, use everything I've learned, but not necessarily have to go down the late night route, which I'm a morning person. I have no business being in this industry. But I'm here.
Nope.
So that's when I started to think, you know what, if the right opportunity came around, I'd be very interested in it. And William Grant approached me and said, we'd love for you to work with us.
They approached you.
Yes.
You were just slinging drinks behind your bar and managing bars, and they walked up and said, hey, you got the moxie we're looking for, or whatever.
Yeah, I'd had a great relationship with them, as I did with other suppliers, as one does as a bar manager.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. So the UK office, the London office for William Grant, is in Richmond, which is West London. So if they're coming into London for an evening out, they're going to hit my cocktail bar before most others because I was in Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about geography and location.
Location, location, location.
There you go. So they would always catch me first. So I just kind of became, not their local, but
they catch you when they were sober.
Right, yeah they remember you.
Maybe that's why I like them better.
Yeah.
Because I never saw them at the end of the night.
Yeah. Sure, and also they probably, you know, you were the first impact of the evening. They remembered you better maybe after running around all night. You know, like we were talking before, even when you have a tasting menu that's 9 courses or more, you start forgetting what the first and second course was, right?
For sure.
So maybe they, you know.
Yeah, maybe that.
They remembered you from the beginning instead of going so deep in.
Yeah, and like when Monkey Shoulder first was still in concept, they would bring the bottle and ask me to put it on the shelf to see how it looked. And, you know, there I'd put it next to the single malts, and they're like, no, put it with the bourbons because that's where we see it fit. Like all this kind of stuff. So I had a good relationship with them. So when they approached me, I was like,
that's interesting.
That's the kind of company or people that I want to be around. Love the brands. Obviously, Hendrix had recently come out, adored that. So it felt right. And then the catch was, oh, and you get to move to America and travel a lot.
So there was a downside.
Yeah.
And to move to America, move to New York.
Yeah, move
right?
to New York.
New York's its own country.
Yeah.
Like, it's not America.
Well, move to New York, but instantly I was 80% on the road. So it really was move to America.
Sure.
You know, that's what it became anyhow.
And even way back then, was your territory the entire country?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Especially when Hendrix was released, it was...
But you weren't even doing Hendrix at that point, right?
You're right, yeah. So my first role with the company was the Glenfiddich Grand Ambassador. So that was the opening. Yeah. And that was an East Coast role. So based in New York, up and down the Amtrak region, as we call it, up and down the coast. And then about 6 months later, for the 2007, that's when the Hendrix role opened. And that was national. So that's kind of when the gates blew open.
Sure.
The frequent flyer miles started piling in. And I was everywhere all of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, you are everywhere all the time.
I really was.
You're like the Questlove of Grand Ambassadors.
Your face is everywhere.
Wow. No one's ever gone there before, Damon. I like it.
I mean, Questlove's everywhere. And yeah. So are you. I want to ask you I feel like I travel a lot. I feel like Souther probably travels a lot as well. But, like, you are on the road all the time. Right. Or in the air.
You live on a plane.
What is your travel advice? What are your hacks or tips? Because I don't know how to pack light, and I don't.
Oh yeah,
but I'm not a morning person. Also.
Yeah, I mean, this is not an insult in any way, but you're very fashion-y. So I think packing light would be difficult for you. You have to have.
I have a lot of hats that take up a lot of room.
You have hats. That's true too. You do have hats. You like in Tales, you brought three, right? You were just there for 4 days.
And I probably bought three at Meyer the Hatter. Down the road from the Monteleone. But I usually go to Tails without a hat so I can buy one at Meyer the Hatters. It's the oldest hat shop
in the South, right?
Yeah, in the South, yeah, 1894. And, I'll fly back with one.
It's at like 310 St. Charles, I know it.
Yeah.
I used to work kind of right next door.
Yeah. But nice. Yeah, I mean, like, it, as far as, I mean, like, typically, like, when I'm traveling, you know, even if it's domestically, I'll always bring a carry-on bag because I never know if I'm going to have to bring back bottles, for instance. Like, if I'm in a different region of the United States. You know, it's different when you live in New York and you have access to pretty much everything all the time. But there's some things that you want to grab when you're in, say, like, if you're in Texas or, like, Wyoming or whatever, wherever you might be, that has something that you can't necessarily... They don't distribute to New York. I don't know. That's one thing for me.
Yeah.
What are your travel tips? And it doesn't have to be just packing.
No. And it took a while for me to figure some of these things out, right? I remember one time
you don't
where,
know till you know.
Yeah. One time I rocked up to Las Vegas in like May to do a training. It was the opening of one of the big casinos. And typical Charlotte story, you know, I land in the taxi straight to the training. There's no like wiggle room. No. There's no like get in the night before and no. So I get straight there and Drew Levinson, who's now with Breakthrough, good old time friend of mine, he's like, it's Las Vegas in May. Why do you have your ski boots with you? And I said, I've been on the road since March and we had this thing in Aspen and, you know, I've been back there and just sort of bored him real quick with my travel schedule since March. You know, that's kind of how I used to struggle through it. And then I discovered like FedEx.
Yeah,
like,
I was about to say ship your
FedEx
stuff.
FedEx stuff to yourself.
Yeah.
Like suitcases and ski boots and those bottles of things you buy in Texas or hats from New Orleans or whatever it might be.
Sure.
So that's become real key. Like if I'm on one of those multi-stop trips, I'm like shredding and...
Sending stuff back home.
On the way.
You know, you can do the opposite, too. One of my regulars at Long Ago Bar, at the Atlantic Grill, was a lawyer who traveled a lot. He said, I don't ever carry a bag, ever. I ship my bag to the hotel. I ship my bag home.
Really?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
What a baller move.
Well, I mean, you know, lawyer probably has just money all over him. But exactly. But I do understand that notion, and I've done that, too.
I mean, I have a motorcycle in Portland, and I have... One in San Francisco, one in LA, and I've got two here.
A boat in every port. I like
it. Some in Oklahoma, you know, like, but yeah, it's like, I guess that would be my equivalent.
Yeah.
I've got some guitars in San Francisco, so
yeah,
like,
spread your stuff out.
It's just like, I don't have to carry my guitars on the flight or like risk checking them like in the belly of the plane if there's like, you know, they could get messed up due to like the temperature and pressure and everything. Anyway, that's a good move. All right, that's valuable information.
Yeah, ship that stuff. How does that feel to kind of live on the road all the time? Where is your home? Is it here in New York?
It is. It's here in Brooklyn. Yeah. It's good. It's exciting. You know, when I was little, I never knew what I wanted to be. I just wanted to travel and be famous. But it's still like...
One out of two ain't bad.
No, you're pretty famous.
You're pretty famous.
No. But even to this day, and this is going to sound lame, I'm sure, but anytime I get to an airport, there's just something about the possibility that still excites me. Even LaGuardia, even on a Monday morning, I just think, you know, what if I would just roll Terminal the dice C. And go anywhere, somewhere. It still excites me. Like, travel is such a gift, and I get to do it for work.
That's excellent.
Truly exciting.
Amazing.
I have vertigo, but I love being on flights.
Yeah.
There's something also about just, like, when you're taking off, just, like, that, the way...
The thrust. Oof,
the thrust of, yeah, it's
the
amazing.
The G-forces.
And I actually kind of love, like, this is weird, but kind of love rough landings.
Oh, yeah, man.
That is weird.
Yeah.
It excites me. I'm like, too. All right, we're live.
I love the rough flight, like all the turbulence and everybody gasping. I'm like, yeah, this is nice. Yes, mind blown. Mind blown.
Oh, I'm the one gasping there. Yeah. Not a fan. Yeah.
Also, my best friend.
I always say that my favorite bar is, you know, they have the most limited selection of drinks. It's like sitting there at my seat at like 11C on the aisle, like the emergency row with, whiskey on the rocks.
Yeah, or gin tonic.
Or gin tonic.
Yeah, my best friend Todd, who I mentioned in the book, Damon, I don't mention you in the book. My best friend Todd has an irrational fear of flight, and he has to travel a lot, and it's horrible for him. It's really bad.
Yeah.
I've flown with him, and he will clutch my arm the entire flight. It's
not just takeoff and landing.
He has the whole time, and he has to get himself pretty liquored up just to get on the plane at all, and he has to fly a lot. So lucky for you that you don't have that. He likes to be where he's going. He just doesn't like to get there.
Yeah,
right. It's horrible. Let's go back to you with the William and Grant action. You got hired on to be this to do Scotch for them.
Yep.
Were you enthusiast of Scotches? I always ask brand ambassadors, do you really love the juice that you're pushing? Right? Were you like, Scotch is my game. I'll totally take this job.
Yeah. Well, I think to be candid, you know, I was a bartender by manager. I loved everything. Mm-hmm. Right? I was passionate about the whole industry.
Yeah, of course.
Still am. It was William Grant as a company that I fell for, if I'm honest, rather than Glenfiddich itself.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my first week was a week at the Glenfiddich Distillery with David Stewart, who was the malt master at the time. And, I mean, if you guys have been to distilleries, if you've been to Scotch distilleries, it doesn't take long to fall in love with whatever it is.
Yeah, it's very romantic.
Yeah, smelling and touching. And so...
I just love copper. So, like, the copper alone. You know.
Yeah. But Glenfiddich is the founding brand of William Grant.
Sure.
So that was literally the distillery that William Grant built. So it was really... valuable to me to spend a lot of time with that brand and appreciate the foundation of the company.
Sure.
Something that I obviously carry through to this day. So was Scotch my go-to? No, absolutely not. But it's also, I think back then, certainly one of the most difficult categories to learn and understand. Just everything
I think still.
Still, right. So it was really valuable for me to have that in my pocket as my strongest category. I mean, flip forward to last year when the Bar 5 Day guys invited me to teach alongside them, which just blew my mind. And they asked me to focus on single malt because to them, that's how they kind of met me. And that was always my strongest category. So it was an incredible opportunity in hindsight that's the way I came through.
Yeah. Outstanding.
Yeah.
How about the notion of being a woman 12 years ago and being asked to be in this position, especially for Scotch? Was that a battle?
Maybe
not a battle, but was that like a hurdle to overcome?
Oh, definitely eyebrows raised and that kind of thing. People would absolutely expect a guy to walk in a kilt and preferably with a Scottish accent, you know. And here I was, a female, English, although most people think I'm Australian. Because my accent has derailed along the years.
All the travel, sure.
So, there were definitely a few eyebrows raised. But, you know, I approach that topic the same way I feel about being a female in the industry in general. I've always had a really easy path through the industry. And I don't just say that lightly. I recognize and understand now that that came from a lot of privilege and a lot of luck and being right place, right time. So I never really had those battles. But I understand that they do exist, and colleagues of mine, especially females in whiskey, have had them. So it's real.
Yeah. I think it's obviously getting less and less so, but I would imagine a dozen years ago that there was certainly, you know, did you feel in any way that you were like the tip of the spear, forefront of this kind of thing, or?
Not at first.
You were just focused on learning the job.
Yeah, I was just kind of doing my thing, but places like, or events like Tales of the Cocktail and some of those gatherings, you know, other females would come up to me, younger females in the business would come up to me and sort of either say thank you, or, you know, we respect you, or you're out there doing such a great job, or setting a great example. And I came to realize that whether I wanted to or not, or asked for it or not, I was a mentor to women in this industry, especially younger women looking for ways to rise up. And along with that platform came the responsibility to, you know, lead by example, do the right thing.
Sure.
So that's when I started taking it a bit more serious and realized that I might have had it easy, but a lot of people don't. Therefore, I need to be on their team.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're just around the halfway mark of the show. We should take a quick break. And then you've got something for us to drink.
Yep.
The rumors are true, people. Charlotte travels around with a hot house cucumber in her bag. it just came out. It's on the cutting board now. So we're going to come back in a second with Noisy Charlotte Voisey.
This episode is supported by The Finch, a seasonal American restaurant in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, where chef owner Gabe McMacken and his team are focused on creating a living restaurant where the choices they make consider the long-term health of the business and of the community. Learn more at thefinchnyc.com. This episode is also supported by C Management, a global leader in creative talent management, representing artists in the fields of photography, creative direction, styling, hair, makeup, manicure, and set design. C Management, management with a vision. Learn more at seemanagement.com.
Anytime and any place I can, you'll know I'm dead when I stop playing.
And we are back. You're listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. In the studio today, we have Charlotte Voisey of William Grant and Sons.
Yeah.
And she brought us...
she brought us something to drink.
Yep.
I'm going to open this bottle.
Oh.
There's the sound. Nice. The sound that launched a thousand ships. Literally. I always say that when I crack a beer, but this is champagne, so it's the truth.
Yeah.
Is it champagne?
Yes. It is champagne. Yep.
What are we going to drink?
So I wanted to bring some champagne to congratulate you, Souther, on the release of your book, the pre-release of your book.
You know, it's so great. Thank you. It's so great when we have, like, thoughtful guests on. And you know who's the most thoughtful guests? Like, bartenders, for sure, they want to take care of us and be hospitable. But the brand ambassadors that come on the show, they really think about it.
Yeah, that's Noah Rothbaum and Dave Wondridge iced us immediately.
But that's lovely. Thank you for that. And you know, I'm gonna have a bit.
Yep,
and so you also brought a bit of mix there to make us a 75, right?
Yeah. So French 75 has long been my favorite gin cocktail. So I brought a Hendrix French 75 base. So if you'd like to have a French 75,
let's do
you
it.
Can do that.
I would love to talk about the French 75 for a little bit.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because
that's a good lead into our next thing. This is what's called a segue.
in the business, they call that a segue. The French 75, there's people debate all the time about whether it's a cognac or a gin cocktail. And what's your take on that? I mean, like, I know that being a, obviously, since it says French in the title,
right?
People think, no, it's got to be cognac. And I know there's like a 95, a 125, What's your take on that whole situation? I mean, it's an anti-aircraft gun.
Right. It's a 75 the artillery millimeter. Shell.
Yeah.
Yeah, my take is that it is a cognac cocktail by its origin, but it became a gin cocktail when it got back to America because that's what people were mixing with at the time.
Yeah, you can go ahead and pour one for Matt. Matt, we're pouring you one as well. You listening? No.
I definitely think it began as a cognac cocktail. And listen, I love a cognac French 75. Sure. But I think it developed into a gin cocktail. And I love to talk to Chris Hanna about that at any opportunity because he doesn't agree. But he has to make them every night for all of us.
Yeah, by the truckload. Well, thanks for bringing all the accoutrement to make this. And then this is a nice segue because pretty quickly you moved from the scotch into gin, and that gin is, I'm sure, in this drink.
Absolutely.
That's Hendrix.
Hendrix gin.
Yeah. A unique and unusual gin, right?
Indeed.
And you've been with them basically since they launched.
Hendrix launched in the U.S. around 2003, so there were a few years there, yeah, when it was kind of just out there, really being seeded. I don't know if launch is the right word.
Sure.
But it was, January of 2007 that I moved over, and that was the first Hendrix ambassador that we had anywhere in the world.
You were the first?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you went from being a Scotch ambassador in America, an English Scotch ambassador in America, to being the national brand ambassador for a relatively new gin that was kind of weird. You want to talk about why Hendrix is kind of weird?
Unusual, we like to say, yeah.
Well, talk about it.
Yeah, so Hendrix Boutique and cheers, Scotland.
How do you say cheers in English?
Jackass. Cheers. Cheers. There you go. I had to think about that for a minute.
Matt, we have one out here for you, too.
So Hendrix is made in Scotland.
That's delightful.
Which, back, isn't so unusual now. And yes, there are other gins made in Scotland, but one associated gin with England, especially, again, we're talking a dozen years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The gin landscape was very different back then. But along came Hendrix and kind of challenged the traditional perspective on what goes into gin. We all knew about juniper. We knew that there was sort of coriander and citrus involved in most gins, but cucumber? How peculiar. So the whole point of Hendrix, or the brief behind Hendrix, was to create a quintessentially British gin. And really,
made in Scotland.
Yeah, exactly. So what could be more British than sitting out on a rainy Scottish summer day eating cucumber sandwiches in a rose garden? I mean, they're just sort of these both icons and aromas and tastes of Britain. And that's really what Hendrix was all about.
Sure. And how many cocktails out there already existed and especially have proliferated since then that involve gin and cucumbers? Like, they're seemingly pretty natural...
The Gordon's Cup was, like, the classic.
Yeah.
Pretty natural pairing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there were other gins that had used cucumber garnish before Hendrix came along. I think there are some old ads from back in the 60s and stuff. Gordon's, to your point, being one of them. But I think Hendrix was the first to use cucumber in the recipe, and certainly Hendrix was the one that went above and beyond to celebrate the cucumber and build a pedestal to put the cucumber on.
Right.
And to this day, the cucumber is the most revered botanical in Hendrix, and we salute that cucumber as often as possible.
Salute the cucumber.
Absolutely.
I think that's the name of this episode.
Yeah. It's our hero. It's our,
Salute the cucumber.
So it was definitely, I remember when I first tried it, I was living in Oklahoma City. I was a bartender. I had just started bartending. And it was in, it was the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
It must have, So it, as you said, it didn't launch in 2003, but it kind of started making its way into the United States around then.
Yeah.
So it must have been right around then that I tried it. And to be honest, I wasn't too big of a gin drinker. I was more about whiskey back then, and I
I take it back.
How's your 75, Matt?
It's very tasty.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
but I will say that Hendrix was the gin that like turned me into a gin drinker.
Amazing.
And that was because, the gins that, I mean, I'm obviously, in Oklahoma, there wasn't, we didn't have like the wide array of spirits and access to the stuff that we have here or in a lot of places. But nowadays, it definitely exists there, but it was like, it was new, it was unusual.
Yep. Check.
And, yeah, got it. Cool.
Ticking the boxes.
But yeah, it really changed the game, you know? And it also like ushered in a lot of new thinking, especially it kind of, in a way, really embraced for the United States more of like a West Coast style. You know what I mean? Like for cocktails. Like kind of like a fresh, like fresher herbal, like lighter kind of vibes, you know?
Yeah.
And whereas like the East Coast is all about like stirred, bitter, boozy, and the West Coast is like fresh garden, you know, stuff. So like, I think it changed. It definitely ushered in the United States kind of cocktail vibes into making like fresher style drinks.
Yeah.
What was your agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. What was your? I mean, that I think that was the collective subconscious at the time. The fresh movement was happening, and then you came out. They came out with this product that, you know, again put that on a pedestal as well. It seemed like a happy marriage all the way around. What was dictated to you as your approach back then, and what was your personal approach back then to getting it into people's hands?
First of all, nothing was really dictated. You know, that's not how William Grant kind of operate. But it honestly, it was all about education, and it was about bringing the cucumber to life and the personality of Hendrix, right? Because fortunately for me, Simon Ford had come to America about 6 months prior, and he did all the groundwork.
Right.
He educated on gin. He brought it back into fashion. He got, you know, the tastemakers, the influencers right on board.
Yeah.
So that I could kind of come in and
steal his thunder.
Sweep up with, now that you know that you love gin, here's something a little different. No, offer an alternative. We worked very closely together back in those days. Yeah.
The high tide raises all boats. We say that all the time in the bar world. I'm sure it's the same in the advocacy and ambassador world.
Especially back then, it absolutely was. But my approach was definitely, you know, depending on where in America I was, I would walk into some parts and people would sort of look at me patronizingly and say, "This is America. We don't drink gin. You know, you sort of, that's an English thing." Just as a sort of, you know, obviously it's not true. But what I would do is just sort of say, well, why don't you just have a nose, like smell it? Because the aroma of Hendrix is just so beautifully orchestrated that then people be like, oh, first of all, that smells different. You know, it smells fresh and green and grassy and cucumbery. And then they would try it. And honestly, like once people actually try Hendrix neat, they're intrigued and they like it, like 9 out of 10. That's not an official statistic. That's just kind of remember being the case.
Sure.
It was trial, and it was, you know, putting on fun events, and it was just being nice to people and being memorable and having fun, and using those relationships that I was fortunate enough to have started making while I was a bartender in London, because much like today, fewer occasions, but we would still travel around the world and do sort of guest shifts and pop up in food and wines and things in other countries. So that's where I would meet the likes of Dale DeGroff and Tony Eboganim early on.
Sure.
So I was using those relationships as well.
Yeah, of course. And what is your approach today? What do you do today? How are you? Because you're now kind of the boss of the team.
Kind of, yeah.
You were the team. You were the team of one.
Yeah. Well, now we have 25 brand ambassadors in the U.S. That's across all of our brands. Uh-huh. Hendrix would have 5 alone. So my approach now is to support them, mentor them as needed, so that they can do their thing and deliver great results for us using their approach. It's always tickled me that you can have 5 completely different people from different backgrounds, different walks of life, and different personalities, but somehow they all embody one brand with a very distinct personality, Hendrix, perfectly. So I love helping them find their way and their way to sort of bring Hendrix to life for their audiences. So that's my job now. It's really to deliver great moments through them. And every once in a while, I'll still throw myself on stage and do my thing because I love it.
Yeah.
And I can. And you know, I've built up many relationships over these 12 years. So.
Well, you've also built up your own personal reputation and persona, and you have to make sure that that's still visible and tangible for people so that they can relate to you, right?
Yeah.
You were talking before we got on about how you're sort of like the soccer analogy, right?
The player manager.
Player manager. Yeah. So you're not. Yeah. You're not just telling people what to do. You're doing it too.
Yeah.
Which is what Damon and I do. We're owner operators. I get in there and sling drinks or clean the toilets or whatever needs to be done.
Exactly.
So the team can see that I'm not asking them to do anything that I'm not going to do. Or
yeah. And it means the world because I've always thought of myself as the bridge between bartender community and corporate America, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's the same with the brand ambassadors. A lot of the people we hire come in from the bar world and they may not have had experience in the corporate world. And it is a culture shock. So I'm also able to be the bridge between them and their new culture. So just kind of
you have to teach them the
soften
way.
The blow. Like, yeah, teach them the
certain,
way.
Certain things like sales and KPIs and like in all the expectations from it. I think it's important to note that, and maybe you can talk to this a little bit, with your transition, especially back, you know, 12 years ago, going from being a bartender to a brand ambassador and like how that role has changed over the past decade. Mm. It seems to a lot of people still to this day that a lot of like young, especially younger bartenders, they're like, I want to be a brand ambassador because they see the fun side of what you do. Mm-hmm. Like, throwing big parties and like lavish dinners and like doing training events, stuff like that. But they don't see
the travel and
like the crazy. You don't have to show your work to them.
Yeah. Right?
But like, you have to show it to your bosses, you know? Like,
right.
There's a lot involved with it, you know?
I think it definitely takes a certain type of person, and that's not a talent issue or skills necessarily. It's more about sort of drive and attitude and ability to be diplomatic. I mean, it's ambassador for a reason, yeah. Right? Just managing different personalities, being able to sort of say no, being able to manage your own time, being entrepreneurial. There's a lot of stress that comes along with it, and everyone can hack it.
Not a chance I could do it.
No I way. Don't know.
No, there's no way. I have no interest in it, and I know it's because it's just not for me. Mm. So what you're saying is absolutely true.
I
it's a thing you have. I don't have it. I don't want it either.
I love doing it. Honestly, it's great.
Yeah.
But I also love people, and I love talking to all kinds of people. It's the reason why I'm a bartender in the first place.
I subscribe to the Bukowski rule of, it's not that I don't like people, it's just that I feel better when there are none around.
No, but like, there's, you know.
That's not true.
The idea of being a brand ambassador, and like, I mean, let's face it, a big part of it is actually sales, right? So there's, you know, like a lot of people get into the game and they're like, I'm going to go hang out at all these like cocktail events and cocktail bars and stuff. But like, then you have to, every once in a while, you've got to do like a training for like a TGI Fridays staff and, you know, Boise or whatever. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, that's to me a lot of fun, man. But it's not because, okay, the reason why I like that is because you get to teach people a skill. You get to inspire bartenders and servers and managers, owners, like, that might not get that much love from bigger brands or any brands or their distributors or salespeople. You know, a lot of, like, control states don't have the access to, like, the distributors and salespeople. They have to like buy through like you know, like a third party, like a retail store.
Yeah.
And the retail store,
they don't know shit. They don't care.
You know,
clock punchers.
They're not gonna like. I mean,
it's fine.
There
That's
are
the
people,
job they
there
chose.
Are people
I get
who
it.
Care, obviously.
Sure.
But you know, at the end of the day, it's like they're not gonna come to your bar, your restaurant, and do a training on a specific like product or even a category. They're not gonna do shit. They're not gonna come, like, so. That's where brand advocacy comes into play, and I that's exciting to me.
Yeah.
I've met a lot of people who actually, like, they worked at, like, a Chili's, mm-hmm. you know, and they were, like, that bartender was like, I'm behind the bar. Oh, my God. I worked my way into the bar.
Yeah,
I'm really excited about this. And then, you know, they're not allowed to necessarily, like, go off the menu because, like, everything's kind of, like, batched or whatever, you know,
corporate pricing, etc. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But they really want it, and so then they'll like join the USBG or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then they just want to get involved any way that they can. Then they start like networking with other bartenders. And, you know, then there are certain people who won't hire you based on the fact that you worked at Chili's or whatever.
Right. Know? It's like a weird catch 22.
Yeah. But, like, you're really, like, eager, right?
Yeah.
That's where...
Advocacy is education. Advocacy. Education is... Yeah. Honestly, it's not just us, you know.
But I think, it's also the networking. A lot of times I mean, I know you've met tons of people, right, Charlotte? Yep. Like this.
Yeah.
Like this example.
Totally.
And you've been able to connect them with the right people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and move them to a place they want to be.
Yep.
Based on your connection with them, you can and with the people, you can connect people with other people and then advance their careers.
Yep.
That's what a brand ambassador is to me.
Sounds very fulfilling. Yeah. And speaking of that, I'm going to ask a question then. What's the most fulfilling part of the job for you?
The most fulfilling part of the job for me is helping other people.
Yeah.
Immediately it's my team, because again, I had such a great time, had a great ride, that it doesn't have to be hard. It's challenging, but if you're the right personality and you like those types of challenges and you like to be on all of the time, like, there's no limit to this role. That's what I always say. And whenever we hire someone new and they come in, I'm like, this is your role to turn into whatever you want, like your wildest dreams. You know, that's what I was able to do. And sure, we have a rough idea of what we'd like you to do, and here are some parameters, but if you want to blow this whole thing up and take brand ambassadors to like 7.0 or wherever we are now, like, there's no reason why it can't be you to do that. So that's the most rewarding thing for me, is to empower people who have that spirit and kind of set them free and let them accomplish whatever they can. And it's the same philosophy to brand ambassadors as it is to those bartenders that you meet in the middle of nowhere in a random place, who perhaps you don't think have many opportunities, but all of a sudden you see the passion, right, in their eyes, or they'll ask you a question, or they're just paying more attention than anyone else in the room. And it's never the management. It's always, you know, the bar back or the one that's overlooked. And when you can catch on to that and put them in touch with someone or recommend a book for them to read, it can really kickstart their career. And that is so rewarding.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
That's what it's all about.
All right. There are some friends outside who want to come inside, and they want to bring us drinks. Do you mind if they come in, Charlotte?
I would love that.
I'm going to invite them in. And then we are close to the end, so I'm going to do some wrap-up stuff, too. Super great having you on.
Thank you so much.
It's been too long, and I already see that the show feels like it was really short, so what we're going to have to do is have you back on to talk great. More about cool stuff that you do.
And again, I want to say this. Like, it's been about 8 years since I started the show, and you've been on my list of people that I wanted to have on the show, so thank you for being on today, and thanks for
thanks for forcing.
You just gotta tell them. I just approach people and I say, "Here are some dates. When are you coming?" Yeah. And then they pick a date. So I don't give them. You know, it's like you don't give a kid. You don't say to a kid, "What do you want for dinner?" They're gonna say chocolate cake. You say you can have pasta or you can have a pork chop, and then you still control the choices. I control the choice.
Yep.
Charlotte, you got some social media you want us to follow you at, or your brands, or what do you got?
Yeah, Instagram, Charlotte HDO Voisey.
HDO?
They're my middle initials. I screwed up my first Instagram account, so I had to go off-piste.
All right.
And then at Hendrix Gin, of course.
All right,
some beautiful photos and tasty cocktails.
Cool. And then is there any, does the company have an Instagram or anything?
Yeah, at William Grant USA.
William Grant USA,
yep.
Or something. You can
something
find
like
it.
That.
Google. The Google machine works for you out there.
Yeah.
You can use it. You can follow Damon and I at Speakeasy Podcast on Instagram and Speakeasy Radio on Twitter. Damon's Damon Bolte. I'm Creative Drunk on all platforms. You can ask us questions there that we can ask our upcoming guests, and we'll try and get them on the air. And then if you could, take a moment to write us a review on your podcast or your favorite platform. Give us a star rating, 5 if possible. And if you're visiting...
No, it's not... Do you want to do this many stars? Do you want to this?
Oh, that's
no.
right.
You got a death.
You can give us 4 or 5 stars. That's your two choices.
4.5 or 5.
Yeah. If you're a New York City resident or you're visiting New York City, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand to make sure we'll be here, because sometimes we do recorded episodes and we're not here. But speaking of that, in walks Nate Dumas. And he's got, what do you got for us here, buddy?
Hey, friends.
Hey, buddy. Good to see you.
Well, thanks for letting me stop by. I didn't want to bum out.
A whole bunch of folks in the studio.
No, it's
all
good to see you.
I was very hesitant to come on by, but you invited me.
I did. I invite everybody, just like I just did.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, last time I was on, we were talking with Bruce, and we were talking about this particular whiskey that just came out from Wild Turkey, the new Master's Keep. 12 to 15-year-old bourbon finished in Oloroso sherry casks, and I just thought it would be a fun time to come by and hang out with you guys and pour a little.
I think I had a little bit of that at Till's.
Oh, yeah?
Right? At Sylvain.
Yeah. You sure did, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Bruce, you want to say hi?
Hey, Bruce.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Nice to see you. Last time you were on the show, it was a phone call.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And I think we were talking about this. So we made a product back in the 90s, Granddad did. Somebody had convinced... thanks.
Yeah, get in the cans.
Somebody had convinced Granddad to do something with sherry, and he was not too excited about that. And so the product was unusual. I don't know if it even spent much time in a sherry cask. It was fortified, so we had poured some sherry in there. It was called Wild Turkey Sherry Signature, and we couldn't pay anybody to take a bottle. So most of it is still sitting in our old bottling plant at Wild Turkey. But we thought, you know, it was ready to kind of remake that. So that's where the revival comes in. And we did it the right way. We took good whiskey. Dad went to Spain and picked out a handful of Oloroso sherry casks. Spent 9 weeks in those. And it's my favorite Master's Keep. I actually prefer it to the other stuff he's come out with. I think it's the best thing that we've come out with.
So wait, how long ago did you do the thing where it's still sitting?
In the 90s.
In the 90s.
It was a 10-year-old 101. Granddad just thought it was a complete waste of 10-year-old 101 juice.
Right.
So the product
well,
was
what convinced
kinda,
him to move forward and do it?
The company.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
The money.
That's right.
But I have to think, like, you know, you've got products on the market now, like Jay Rieger that adds...
Yeah, I was going to say, Colorado whiskey from Stranahan's, yeah. Jay Rieger with the...
With their Kansas City whiskey, and the monogram. Yeah, and the monogram, which...
I love sherry. I love whiskey. Why not put them together? It all mixes on the inside. You know what
so
I'm
like,
saying?
It seems like you maybe were on the cutting edge of a thing that was from the past, right? Jay Rieger picked up their recipe because it used to exist and it disappeared due to Prohibition. They brought it back, but you were doing it in the 90s before they were doing it.
Yeah, like, I think you would be surprised if you look back, not only with us, but Ancient Age, Heaven Hill, Jim Beam. A lot of us were doing the stuff that people think is new now back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah.
The difference is people back then really didn't care at all.
Yeah.
They wanted their Jim Beam or their 101 or their... Heaven Hill or their Ancient Age, but now that whiskey is cool and people realize that we can do a lot of different things in the category and it's all good, we can have fun.
The cascagory.
There you go.
All right, I'm reaching.
There's something
now.
There. There's something.
We're at the end of the show.
I just had a few drinks.
I had one small French 75. And thank
one
you
small
for making those for
That's
us
right.
again.
Well, guys, we're right here at the end.
I just want to say this. You know. This feels really good. Like,
yeah, friends.
This reminds me a lot of, like, and we definitely like to open up the studio so people can come in and, like, hang out just like this. But doesn't it feel like when you're, like, out and about in New York City and you're popping around and you're hanging out at bars, Charlotte rolls in, Nate rolls in.
Guests from out of town.
Bruce rolls in.
Yeah.
Out of town. Sarah Morrissey's standing way back there with a beer.
Looking all cool.
I, like... This is like what happens. This feels very like
this is
like
it.
Normal to me, but yeah. We just happen to be in a place that's not a bar. But like friends in the industry rolling in and out, like this is cool, man.
It is cool. We have friends, Damon.
We're doing all right.
We got friends.
Finally,
all right. We got friends, and we got friends who bring us booze. Yes. That's delicious. Thanks again.
Best kind of friends.
Cheers, y'all.
Noisy Voisey for bringing us French 75s and carrying around cucumbers in your bag everywhere you go last 12 years. thanks to Nate Dumas for bringing us some delicious Wild Turkey. What's the name again? Revival.
Yeah.
And yeah, that wraps up the show for me.
Just
want to mention, don't forget to go to heritageradionetwork.org, click on the beating heart to donate. Oh, you got something more to say? What's up?
Yeah, man. You cut me off.
Oh, I did? I'm sorry.
I will be down in Kentucky, actually, speaking of this. I'll be down from Saturday to Sunday. Not overnight, but I'll be down.
I'll see you there
this Saturday. Yeah, we will, because I'll be down at Camp Runamuck.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And I'll bring our studio's recorder. I'll be interviewing some folks down there, poolside, campfire side.
That's right.
It'll probably be really slurry and blurry, But can't wait to come down. Bruce, we got to talk about some stuff while we're down there.
And, let's do it. Drink some good whiskey.
We'll drink some okay whiskey.
Right. Yeah. Fair.
And we'll be running around Louisville for that. And hopefully we'll get to see y'all while we're down there. I'll be at camp at night, but during the day I'll be in Louisville. So if anyone wants to like hang out and grab lunch or thing, hit me up.
Sounds
on
great.
Social media.
I guess I should mention as well, I'm taking off this weekend too. I'm going to BevCon. It's in LA this year for the first time.
Yep.
I'm going to go over there and do a talk about pop-up bars. Then I'm going to do a pop-up with Aaron Polsky at Harvard and Stone.
Oh,
and
nice.
Then I'm going to... I'm going to be a part of what's called Let's Get Lit. Let's Get Literary with Brad Thomas Parsons and a whole bunch of authors. I'm an author now.
Yeah, you are.
So I'm going to be reading an excerpt from my book at BevCon. Thanks, Matt.
Well, you're not just going to like FaceTime iPhone?
I'm going
to
go there.
That's how you did your whole book.
That's right. I'm going to go there. Well, once again, what a great show. Thanks for everybody for showing up and hanging out in the studio. Thanks for bringing us cool things to drink. And also, thanks for doing what you do in general to make sure that... everybody's drinking educated and responsibly, and thanks for sharing all your wit and wisdom with us here on the Speakeasy.
That's it for this week. Check out Heritage Radio for many more programs like this one, and we'll see you the week after
we'll
next.
We'll see you soon.
We'll see you soon.
Cheers, all right, guys.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove. Gonna get you some in the end. Well, let's begin with that aside.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.